Omaha Public Radio presents another program from Film Streams, Omaha's nonprofit cinema on Noon Forum. On today's program, we'll hear a panel discussion which followed a screening of the 2011 documentary film The Interrupters, directed by Steve James. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Wednesday evening, September 7, 2011, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the panelists and do not necessarily represent those of Film Streams, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. The Interrupters tells the moving and surprising stories of three violence interrupters who try to protect their Chicago communities from the violence they once employed. From acclaimed director Steve James and best-selling author Alex Kotlowitz, this film is an unusually intimate journey into the stubborn persistence of violence in our cities. Shot over the course of a year, The Interrupters captures a period in Chicago when it became a national symbol for that violence. During that period, the city was besieged by high-profile incidents, most notably the brutal beating of Darian Albert, a Chicago high school student whose death was caught on videotape. The film's main subjects work for an innovative organization called Cease Fire, which believes that the spread of violence mimics the spread of infectious diseases, and so the treatment should be similar, go after the most infected. The members of the panel will include Jeanette Taylor, Executive Director of Impact One, Thomas Warren, former Omaha Chief of Police and currently President and Chief Executive Officer of the Urban League of Nebraska, and Ben Gray, Omaha District 2 City Councilman. The moderator of the discussion will be Willie Barney, President and Facilitator of the Empowerment Network and Omaha 360. Here now to introduce the program is Jeanette Taylor.
My name is Jeanette Taylor. I am the Executive Director of Impact One, and we are a nonprofit located in North Omaha. Our primary focus is gang intervention and prevention. We're trying to be more on the preventative side now. We do a summer jobs program, and we have a bunch of events we throw all year long, trying to help young people get on the right path. The movie that you're going to see is called The Interrupters, and it's about a group out of Chicago called Cease Fire. A lot of our direct street mediation and intervention is modeled after this program. So a lot of the things that you're going to see in the documentary are things that we do on an everyday basis. After we watch the film, we're going to get together and have a brief panel discussion. Willie Barney's going to join me with that. He is the president and facilitator of the Empowerment Network of Omaha, and he leads Omaha 360, which is a citywide violence prevention initiative.
All right. We'll get started. Again, there are some others that are here with us. Again, my name is Willie Barney. I'm with the Empowerment Network in Omaha 360. We facilitate a pretty large group of intervention, prevention groups here in the city. And I want to introduce, I don't know if Rachel, we can introduce the others that are on the panel with me. First of all, you should recognize, we call him Chief Warren. He's the former chief of police for Omaha, Mr. Tom Warren, who is now the CEO of the Urban League. Let's welcome him. And to the far, to your far right, my left, is our councilman for District 2, Mr. Ben Gray, Councilman Ben Gray, who also does intervention work as the emergency team director for Impact One. And then in the middle, you heard from her earlier, but that's Jeanette Taylor, who's the executive director of Impact One. And as you were saying with your comment, we need to do these types of things in Omaha. And I think what you'll hear in a few minutes is what is actually going on here. So. And again, let's recognize Rachel Jacobson for allowing us to do this and bringing this film here. And I think I need to give up the mic. But just as an overview, I mentioned Omaha 360. Starting about 3 years ago, a few people got in a room and said, what do we need to do to reduce violence in Omaha? If you remember in 2007, the summer of July, there were 31 shootings in 31 days. And the whole community, rightly so, was in an uproar. But at that time, we were a year into developing strategies. And from three people being around the table to then seven organizations has led to well over 100 organizations that are meeting every single week, Wednesdays at 2 o'clock, law enforcement, faith community, impact groups as far as intervention, prevention groups, and others get together specifically to deal with issues that have happened in the past week or the last couple of weeks, as well as plan what are the specific things that need to happen to prevent violence in the first place, but then also to intervene. So many of the things, and you'll hear about this, many of the things that you've just seen recently just on the screen in the film are being done every single day in Omaha, behind the scenes, every single day. And I'll just throw it over to, we'll talk a little bit more, but Jeanette, if you want to give an overview of Impact One, and then we'll just move forward.
Okay, everybody. Hi, Impact One kids. All right, basically, Impact One is kind of similar to Ceasefire in the regard that we do a lot of gang intervention and prevention. But in addition to that, we try to work with the kids as far as getting them through school, getting positive things in their lives, getting them work opportunities. We have a summer jobs program. Some of the critical work that we do is if there's a homicide or a shooting, we will respond to the trauma centers, Creighton University Medical Center and University of Nebraska Medical Center. We work closely with them because when someone's shot, it's usually highly, highly emotional. The family's emotional, and there can be altercations in the ER. So we try to work with the families through that tough time. And if it results in a death, then we usually work with them through the funeral and try to have some type of follow-up care after the fact. But a lot of the work we do is mainly with young people between the ages of, I'd say, 15 to about 20. We try to get them job opportunities, so we have them work for us during the summer with hopes that they'll get enough work experience to go out and get permanent jobs after the fact. We work with young people in OPS, primarily in Blackburn High School. And we recently started the Village Basketball Association, which is it's a basketball association with nonprofits located primarily in North Omaha. And we've been recently getting whooped every game, but it's all good. It's a good way to bring the community together. So we have kids from all over that come and participate in that basketball league. And mainly one thing that we do is we try to throw a bunch of events throughout the city to get people involved and let them know that people from the Impact One staff, we really care. So any questions?
Just as additional background, that Impact One was started after a summer job program. One of the things that's most encouraging about this film for me is that it does specifically state what we have found is when young people have an opportunity to prove themselves through employment opportunities, positive activities, you see a direct correlation and reduction in violence. There is no question. We've been at this now 4 years, and during the summer, which typically is the highest time for violence in the city, 3 out of the last 4 years, we've had significant reductions. And again, you may not know this because a lot of times the press does not cover it. There's been a 31% reduction in homicides in the city over the last 3 years, and there's been a 25% reduction in shootings during the summer. It's documented, and specifically, like Ceasefire, they don't focus on the whole city of Chicago. They focus on a specific neighborhood, and they are resourced to a point where they have a director and two outreach workers just for that one neighborhood. At full staff, Impact One may have eight people for the whole city. So there's but in those areas, you may have heard that Ceasefire will see a 35% to 40% reduction in homicides and shootings in those neighborhoods they focus on. We see the same exact result in those neighborhoods where we have a concentrated focus. So you're absolutely right. It does work. There's no question. Employment opportunities, positive activities, engagement opportunities for the young people has proven over and over again. So it's not a question from my perspective as what do we do? I think in many ways we probably have 90 to 95% of what needs to be done. We just need more of it. I think we're going to open up for questions as well, but one of the other things, just as far as Omaha 360, that I'll share with you, again, we have now over 100 organizations that are partnering with us. We have a four-part strategy that we work on. The first part is prevention. The second part is intervention. The third part is enforcement, and we have a very active engagement with law enforcement and starting with Chief Hayes and the precinct captains. And then on the other side is reentry, because many times we've seen quiet moments happen in the city where we'll go 3 months without a homicide, and then something will happen. And many times, not all the time, there are individuals that are coming out of prison without an employment opportunity, without anywhere to go, without a one-stop shop, and pretty soon, going through the stuff that you saw with Flamo and the other guys, there's no opportunity for them to do anything different. And as much as we coach and counsel in this group specifically, we don't have enough opportunities. We haven't figured that part of it out. During the summer, we don't do too bad. But in other months, typically, and I was looking at some charts today, during the months of August and September are typically the peak points for violence in the city. and I don't think it's by accident that it happens. One of the biggest players on the prevention side, of course, is the Urban League. Tom Warren has a huge background both on the enforcement side, but now also on prevention and creating programs to get our young people active. So I don't know if you want to go to questions or comments, and then we can do that, or if you want to hear more about some of the initiatives that are going on. This is the interactive part, so we need to hear from you.
And let me make a comment too, Willie, if you don't mind, before you all ask questions. I strongly believe, and I shared this with Willie the first day we started the summer jobs program, and I've been doing this for more than 20 years, and I have several individuals that were really, really what you would describe as hardcore individuals that have essentially turned their lives around and are doing extremely positive things. Probably the one that I'm most proudest of is our program director, Barbara Robinson. Barbara and I have been together for through thick and thin, good and bad, up and down. We've been through it all. We've witnessed it all. But I firmly believe that the majority, and when I say the majority, I mean 90% of the people that I think are involved in this activity don't want to do what they're doing. And if they had alternatives, and if we could provide some of those alternatives, then I think we could turn things around much, much more quickly than we do. A lot of times what you see in our, you know, in the work that we do, when you watch the news, you see where we were not successful. But we have way more successes than we have failures, way more. And we're going to continue to build on that. I specifically go after, or at least talk to and try to get one-on-one with some of what people would describe as some of the real hardcore guys, but we all do it, and we all engage in it, and we have an organization and what we did with Impact One, we went around the country and we looked at various models, because we did go to visit Ceasefire. We went to Milwaukee to visit their program that's in the schools. We went to Cincinnati, Oakland, a number of other cities, Boston, to look at what various people were doing. And when we came back here, one of the things we wanted to do was to devise a program that would meet Omaha's needs. We can't be a Ceasefire, and we didn't want to be a Ceasefire because none of their work until recently occurred in the classroom. We wanted to be in the classroom because if you can stop it there, a lot of times you have relationships that are built up in these classrooms that manifest themselves in the streets, and you can talk to people more easily if you have connections with them when they're in the classroom. Impact One has been really successful at Blackburn and turning situations around there. You don't hear a lot of the stories that you used to hear about Blackburn School. We're going to make it better, and we're going to make things better in this community, and we're going to do it through Impact One. We're going to do it through the Empowerment Network and 360. We're going to do it with all of our partners, and we're going to do it, if necessary, with pieces of legislation. But we're going to get the job done.
What's the relationship between Impact One and the Omaha Police Department?
I want to be really clear about this. Impact One is part of the Empowerment Network of Omaha, and it's also a part of Omaha 360. But as far as like direct relationship between Impact One and the police department, we don't do that. A lot of the information we get, or if we're working with kids and they are in difficult situations, that's private and confidential, and we keep it that way. But as far as Omaha 360, it's a citywide initiative to, you know, basically decrease violence in the city. So the police department are at the table for the Omaha 360 meetings, and they're at the table for the Empowerment Network meetings, and we are part of those meetings. But as far as Impact One, our kids in particular and the things that are going on in their lives, we keep that separate.
We have to.
And if I can offer what makes this approach a little bit different, the Ceasefire approach, what Impact One is doing. You know, I can recall our earlier conversations when Willie and I would sit down and talk about the gang activity and the gang violence that would take place in the city of Omaha, and what was at the root of it. Oftentimes, the retaliatory types of shootings that would occur after an incident. And when Impact One was launched, I can recall we had a pretty high-level briefing on gang activity and exactly what was taking place in our community and what it would take to address the problem in a non-traditional way. In law enforcement, we were putting emphasis on prevention, intervention, and enforcement, but we really didn't have a tool to effectively interrupt the retaliatory types of shootings that would occur whenever we had a gang-related incident. The utilization of the ex-offender, and what you saw in this movie was the ex-offender was street credibility, and some of these guys were what we call OGs, original gangsters. And you have to understand the city of Chicago and how gang activity is multi-generational. Amina, I mean, you have to know the history of the black gangster, I'm sorry, the Keystone
Rangers,
yeah, and Jerry Fort. Jerry Fort was probably the most notorious gang member. Jeff Fort was probably one of the most notorious gangsters in the history of the city of Chicago. Legendary. And for his daughter now to be in a role to intervene effectively, I mean, it was very profound. And you've seen the impact that she had in large part due to her credibility and her reputation. You know, those are things that we in law enforcement, we couldn't do effectively. There were those in the community that would attempt to talk to these young men to no avail. But when they have somebody who they respect, that has the rapport, that has the credibility, they can effectively intervene in these situations and at least momentarily disrupt the retaliatory shootings. And so the work that's being done by Impact, very similar in model and in theory to what's taking place in Chicago with ceasefire, but it is really a non-traditional approach and strategy, and one that, quite frankly, law enforcement had to acknowledge. We had to acknowledge the need. We had to acknowledge the fact that they could have a role in reducing crime and violence. And so it did require somewhat of a shift in order to appreciate the work that's being done by groups like Impact One. So there's kind of a relationship, whether it's direct or indirect, there is a relationship.
Talking about Impact One being in the classroom, do you visit schools? I mean, obviously getting to kids in Blackburn, but kids who haven't maybe gotten to the point where they're in a school, the alternative school. Do you visit the OPS schools or different schools and talk to kids early on?
Right now in the main schools that we're in Blackburn, but we're also at North High School. And we have kids that go to all of the high schools. So if there's an issue, we will go to Central or Benton as needed. But our staff is really small, and I want to acknowledge the Impact One staff, Barbara Robinson over there hiding out, George and Nia in the back.
Wave your hand, Barbara, so they can see you.
Wave, staff.
George.
typically what we do, if we get wind of an issue, we will go to that high school and address it. We don't necessarily work with the middle school kids because they already have a lot of programming available to them. What we know is that for the teenagers and young adults, there aren't as many programs available to help them get out of their situation. So we try to get around as much as we can, but we do have a really small staff.
I did want to also recognize he's not with Impact One, but one of the original folks that we worked with when we designed the summer job program and also intervention work is Chrome, sitting over to my left. Why don't you wave your hand? He's now... we had a chance to meet probably 3.5-4 years ago, and really, I think he was part of a session where we just listened. A lot of times, even when we have events like this, a lot of adults get a chance to speak on what's going on, but what we started with was just listening. And I remember the first time we had an opportunity, Chrome and I and some others and Ben sat down for 4 hours. We didn't preach. We didn't say what you need to do or you need to stop doing this. We just listened for 4 hours, literally 4 hours straight, about what was going on, what was causing some of the incidents. And to see him now doing the work that he's doing with intervention at Girls Inc. and others in the community, it's awesome. And it's just a testimony of what's possible when we focus and give people an opportunity.
She gave me a mic, so I guess I gotta say something. All right. Well, it was New World Youth Development at the time. When they first found me, I was fresh out the streets and fresh out of jail for a robbery. And I'll say, working with that organization, that's where I first sparked my passion to help the community. You know, after years of doing so much negative and shooting and fighting and robbing and all the gang banging, they gave me a chance to feel good about, you know, actually doing something good, helping somebody. And, you know, to never know that feeling, to never know how it really feels to really make an impact on somebody's life, is like, it was weird to me. So when I felt that feeling, I'm like, I want to feel this feeling more often. So after the whole transition and when my term ended working with that organization, I said, I don't want no other job. I don't want to go work at Arby's or JCPenney, Walgreens, or nothing like that. You know, I said, I want to do this. I want to help these cats on the streets to, you know, better their lives and get up out of the lifestyle like I did. I ran with the Gangster Disciples when I was on the streets. And I really didn't, me and my guys, we were all equal. You know, I didn't look at myself as like I had more power than anybody. You know, me and my guys, we ran as one. And when it was all said and done, I realized the influence that I could have had on my guys instead of using that influence for a negative and using, you know, the power that I had to commit crimes. I could have been really leading the pack into a whole nother direction. And with that, I didn't leave my, you know, my gang and just leave and disappear on them. You know, I said, I'm going to get me together. Then I'm going to go back and try to grab the guys and get them together. Now, there's some guys I work with. I do personal intervention. You know, I got a group of guys, I say maybe 10 of them at the max, that I work with on my own time. And some of them, you got to let them learn the hard way. Really, I mean, I like to think I'm Superman. I'm all over the place and this and that situation. But the reality is I'm not Superman, and I can't help everybody. So there's a couple that I just got to let run astray. But as long as I planted that seed in their mind that there's somebody always there for them when they, you know, really get ready to change their life, they can always come back to me. I make sure they know that. But it's pretty much all I wanted to say is that I'm working at Girls Incorporated, doing anti-violence work there. And you might say there's not much violence at Girls Inc., but we know the reality. Yeah. Guys that live that lifestyle, you know, we know the reality. A lot of situations start from the bottom. Maybe he took my girlfriend or something. And then, because me and Spanky here, you know, we're homeboys, and this, I don't like this guy for taking my girlfriend. I'm going to tell him half of the story. I'm going to tell him, man, I don't like that dude. Yeah, man. And he going to say, I don't like him either. Let's get him, you know. And that's when it involves the gang and then so on and so forth. And then so many situations happen in between time that you forget where it all started at. Now your whole hood is involved and y'all shooting and fighting. And now the reason is because they killed my last homeboy that died, you know. But I just want to say that I'm keeping it pushing and I'm doing it the way that works best for me. And, you know, if you're living that lifestyle, you know, you see me out and about, holler at me, you know. It's always somebody there that can help you out. And if you don't like that lifestyle you're living, if something in the back of your head telling you that it's wrong, then you know it's wrong. All I did was walked away. Simple as that. On the movies, we see changes. Tuck your shirt in, pull your pants up, do a whole 360, you know, give your life to God. If you choose that route, that works for some people. You got to do what works for you. First step is to walk away. That's all I had to do. We fear change because of what we see change as on the movies and you know, some people. But we don't know how easy it is till we try it. You know, I lived so many years fearing change and not wanting my homeboys to think different of me. When I left the gang, I just walked away. They respected it because in the back of everybody's head, when they're on the streets doing that dirt, at nighttime, when they spend time alone, they really think to themselves, like, I'm tired of this. I used to write poetry at night, and my homeboys never knew. I used to write my feelings on paper because that's the only person I felt like I could talk to. I didn't feel like I could talk to my homeboys about sentimental stuff. And I said one day, I'm tired, man. They didn't buy me out for $500. I'm always on the front line. I'm always shooting and fighting. I'm always quick to wake up out my sleep. And they left me in jail for $500. I walked away, and I didn't care. And the results was excellent because I soon got homeboys coming to me telling me, man, I want to change too, you know. And they always felt that way. And I don't want to take up too much more time. But I just wanted to let y'all know, you know, those of you living that lifestyle, man, it's easier done than it is said, you know. Just walk away. Just like you're giving say you don't wear dress shoes and you wear them one time and you start to like them. You're like, hey, I might start wearing these more often. You never know till you try. Just walk away. And then we'll see. There's always a sheep to follow.
Right. Let's show some love for Chrome. And again, as Councilman Gray said, one example of the successes that you don't hear about on television or in the paper or anywhere else. Just one example of what happens when a young person gets an opportunity, and that's really what we're trying to provide, is more opportunities for employment, more opportunities to turn their lives around. And as Councilman Gray told me 3 years ago, 95% of the folks out there want to do exactly what he's doing.
First of all, thank you, Chrome, and thank you for all of you for making this happen and having our voices be heard. I was struck in watching the film for a couple particular things, and one thing in particular was the film was really about making connections for me. And giving people some dreams and letting them think about goals for their future. At the same time, it started to address the idea of restorative justice, which I think is severely lacking in the understanding of what restorative justice is. But it got me thinking about, Jeanette, what you were saying with engagement opportunities and some of the successes that you've had and some of the things that you're doing for preventative engagement opportunities within the school. So if you could speak to that, it would be greatly appreciated.
Okay. As far as engagement goes, we know that when kids are just at home and they have nothing to do, it's idle time, that's when they get in trouble. The main thing is in the summer, they have a lot of free time on their hands, and so we try to provide them work opportunities. They come work for us, and it's only part-time. But they take it seriously. They get work experience. And what we've noticed over the last 2 years is that the kids that have been with us for the last three summers are getting permanent jobs. A lot of times, employers will discriminate against our kids because maybe they have long hair, they have braids, maybe their pants are sagging or whatever the case may be. We just have to give them opportunities. We have to let them know the proper way to dress when you're going to work. It's okay to dress that way when you're kicking it on the block, but when you go to work, you take it seriously. And I think that over the last 3 years, the kids that have worked for us, they get they build their self-confidence up. They're not as timid when they go to the workplace, and it helps. And we've had a lot of kids who are successful and have gotten permanent full-time jobs. We've had kids who basically were told that they were dumb, they wouldn't achieve anything, and now they're in college. I have a kid at Texas A&M right now. I have a kid at UNO. I have kids at Iowa Western. We have kids all over who were told they would never succeed at anything. And I love my kids. I love them to death. And it seems like we offer different opportunities to them. They come out, like today, they didn't want to come to Film Stream. They're like, where's this movie theater at? Why do we have to go? So I bribed them with pizza, and they came. But it's just, we just try to offer a lot of different opportunities to them, show them different ways to go, and we've been successful so far. Anybody else want to talk? Go ahead.
In the film, there was that particular situation with the mother and the two sons, and just showing how frustrated she was with the situation. She was one woman with three sons and a father who was incarcerated. I'm sure that that's a situation that's not uncommon in this day and age, especially dealing with children that come from those type of backgrounds. What type of opportunities or assistance do you provide to parents that find themselves in that situation? Is there any programs out there or anything that you do to assist those parents that are actually involved in their children's lives and are trying to intervene and make them better?
Being part of Empowerment Network, we have, like I'd say, 70 consistent organizations that come and they help and they provide services. And we actually, at Impact One, we'll refer families out to those organizations to get additional help. Barb and I, we were at court today with a young man, and he violated probation, and we knew he was going to violate. It wasn't his fault, but he did violate. And before he went to court today, we had already reached out to his mom. We were like, this is what you need to do. You need to set up parenting classes. So she's going to go to Child Saving Institute for the parenting classes. She had literally everything in place to present it to the judge when they went to court today. So I think a lot of parents don't know of all the programs that are available to them. So they come to us, and we literally tell them everything that's available. We get things set up and in place before they go to court or before they go to see a probation officer or whoever. And then that way they'll see that they have a plan. So that's mainly how we handle that.
You know, as a service provider, we do work with the full family. You know, I found it interesting. Those young men, they seem to be very, very angry, particularly at one another, and they probably didn't realize what they were angry about. You know, I did hear the young man mention the fact that, you know, his father wasn't in the home, and he had some frustration around that issue. And we recognize that many of our young men are growing up in environments where there's not a positive male role model in the household. We have programs, our Urban Youth Empowerment Series is one where we have youth development staff that work with these young men and establish that relationship where they have a caring adult. And if in instance of a male role model, I can give you an example. Most recently, I had a parent that came into the Urban League. She had a teenage son that he spent 2.5 years in the ninth grade. Got involved in our program, and we have supplemental education and credit recovery programs, and he established a relationship with our specialists. And in 18 months, he earned 38 credits, and he graduated. And she bought me a copy of his diploma, and he had also gotten accepted into Wayne State College. And she bought me a copy of his acceptance letter. And so I know that the impact of a relationship with a caring adult, the rapport, and oftentimes the tough love that's provided by someone outside that immediate family, and that oftentimes these young men will respond. But there are programs that are available. And certainly, you know, when you know of someone that may be in that situation, please refer them to our organization, and we'll certainly see what we can do to assist them.
I have a question for Ben or anyone who can answer this. I know a lot of these young people are experiencing the trauma of seeing a murder at a very young age, possibly engaging in homicide themselves. My question is whether or not, whether they seek it out or not, is there a mental health component as part of Impact One? I know they come to the meetings on a weekly basis with the service providers, but if they don't seek it out, is there a way to connect them into those services as part of their participation in Impact One?
We actually, we do offer therapy to kids who've seen violence, but typically in our community, it's not something that we do. It's not of the norm. I actually witnessed a homicide in 2009, and I'm an adult. I'm not going to reveal my age, but I'm an adult. And just seeing that, I was traumatized to see a kid die. I've never expected to see anything like that, and I had to go get therapy. So a lot of the kids around here, it's hard for me because I know that they've seen brothers and cousins die, to deal with that, and people expect you to get up and go to school the next day. I'm an adult, and I couldn't deal with it. So just thinking about all that I went through personally, we always offer to pay for counseling, and out of all the kids that I've offered it to, I've only had one kid actually take me up on the offer, and he went to a couple of counseling sessions, and then he stopped. So I'm like, okay, this is not working. So Ben was working with Derica Blackman from Oakland, and she trains on youth development. So she came out and did some workshops on what they call radical healing, which basically gives the kids an opportunity. It's usually in a private room, no adults, just our staff and the kids, to work through a lot of the things that they've seen, things that they feel, and we all share our stories, so we all have that common ground, and everything in there is confidential. And they've worked with her since 2008. So we know that the therapy, they're not so receptive to that, but the radical healing, those sessions work. So that's what we try to do more than anything else.
Go ahead. I kind of wanted to dovetail on both what Jeanette was saying as well as what Chrome was saying. We had an incident with a young man who had recently gotten out of the penitentiary, and there was a funeral that we attended. And out of that funeral came some stories that were inaccurate and not true. But it almost got two major players going at it with each other. And we stepped into that, and we stepped into that environment, got the two young men separately and then together, and we solved what essentially was rumor and not fact. And we stopped what was about to be a very bad situation. And we do the... When they ask, we do reach out to them, and then we have our own. Sometimes what you have to do is let young people talk. You know, I mean, you got to let them talk. You can't talk to them. You can't dictate to them. You can't tell them what they should be doing. You got to let them talk because they got to talk that pain out. And, you know, sometimes it's really difficult for me, especially sometimes, to watch my team members and these families go through some of the things that they go through. Our team takes this stuff personally, and they redouble their efforts, and we try to tell each other to go home every now and then and get some rest, and it almost never works, and nobody ever listens to me, and because everybody's very passionate about this work. And, you know, I guess the thing that you never really get used to, a mother's scream when her child dies is different from any scream you've ever heard. And it's hard to deal with, but it's necessary to deal with. And you have to put yourself, you have to put that aside and address it the best way you can. We have lost, it's not just we administer to people who have lost individuals, we have lost people that we work with very closely that we thought we had. And I lost one that I didn't expect to lose. And when those kinds of things happen, it makes it even more difficult, but it makes the work even more essential. And I think that's why the staff that we have, you know, they rebound in spite of some very difficult circumstances, and we continue to move forward. because going backwards is not an option, and not doing anything is not an option.
I wanted to weigh in just a little bit on the getting help, the behavioral help part of it, mental health part of it. Outside of employment, I think it's one of the biggest gaps that we have. Though we have a lot of service providers, the shock of seeing somebody or a family member or a brother or father or a mother or somebody that's been struck by violence like that, the number of funerals that we've all gone to in the last 3 years, it's shocking. And so as much progress as we're making, I think as a community we have not fully hit the employment piece, and we haven't fully dealt with, because it floored me, you know, and I want to speak to people that maybe feel like they're so removed from everything. You're talking to somebody that spent 15 years in corporate marketing and doing strategic planning, and I never imagined that I'd be sitting in the room working with young people talking about intervention that just lost their best friend yesterday, or out in the street trying to, you know, work when they let me go out. But being there and seeing it face to face and seeing the young people that are just struggling to live, just struggling every day to live, and the other ones that at 9 and 10 years old have been through some of the stuff that's on the screen. I mean, this is not just watching television. I mean, every day they've seen this in their household or down the block. We haven't come to grips. I don't think the whole country's come to grips with how we deal with that and help people get past some of that, because it's a day-to-day deal, and a lot of folks in communities are dealing with it.
Okay, about the film, I feel that when we watching this movie, we go through the same stuff at home.
Right.
And I think everybody need to reach out and actually come together as one, because we going through this every day.
That's right.
That can come here. And that's all I have to say about it. All
right. Thank you for speaking up.
Thank you.
Ty, when we talk, what are you looking for? What do you need? What do you want, should I say?
Need to find the job.
Thank you. Say it again.
The job. I need a job ASAP.
Okay. That's what we hear from young men and young women all the time. When I saw little Mikey on the film and that look on his face when he was raking, I got a job. When I saw some young men, this is when it really hit me. One of the young men in our program 3 years ago, he didn't know I was looking at him, but on payday, he got his first check from the program, and he looked as hard as can be in every other situation. But when he got that paycheck, this huge smile came on his face. And then he noticed that I was looking at him, and the smile went away. But I'll never forget that image. He had made some money that he was going to help in his household and be able to take care of his family. It's never left me, standing there watching him open that paycheck. It does something. We take it for granted. But when a young person has an opportunity to have that employment opportunity and see what goes on, and then to be able to go back and buy themselves some clothes, or in some cases keep the lights on at the house, it just does something and has a huge impact.
Hello, my name is Ray Valvan, and people out here call me Spanky. And that was a pretty cool film right there. And I like to say that right now I'm in the transition of changing the way I think about doing things, the way I am. And a lot of y'all looking at me now, and I'm about to tell you something that's going to shock you. Me and my friends are part of this reason, this problem out here. And I'm not proud of it. And as I looked at that film, as I used to do, well, I do the Rest in Peace t-shirts out here, and it's like I almost had a nervous breakdown from doing so many, because everybody was like under 17, and it was killing me, you know. Sometimes I stay up 3 days straight just pressing shirts, writing on it. And half the people that came through to get the shirts, they wasn't even sad. It was like, make my shirt better than the next person's shirt, you know? Right. And it was like, dang, this person is dead, and all you can think about is your shirt, you know? And right now I'm trying to extend my services to whoever willing to take them to help stop this. I'm from Inglewood, California. And right now we got some programs out there It's not formal, but all the OGs came together with their so-called enemies, and they said, hey, we're not going to shoot y'all no more. Y'all not going to shoot us no more. And it's working pretty good. Good big job. Is as large as California is and small as this place is, I've been to more funerals here than there. And I've been in a gang since I was like 8. I'm 44 now. And I see more killings here than in California, and that's sad. And half the people here are mostly related to each other, you know? And to see all this stuff going on here is like, is really killing me too, because I helped create it, you know? And I'm ready to, I gotta get this off.
You gotta get it off. Good job.
I heard a lot of references about young men. I would like to hear a little bit more about the young women who are involved in the programs, because I think that, as was shown in the film, the lack of caring and support that many of our young women get is not there. It's just not there. And so if you could speak to that, I'd appreciate it.
There's a lady sitting two rows behind you in a white shirt. Her name is Nia Nicole. She heads up the Impact One youth awareness sessions with all the female students that are in both North and Blackburn. Nia goes the extra mile. A lot of these girls, they don't have positive female role models. So we try. Barb is gone. But Nia, Barb, and I try to be that for them. And it's the simple things. It could be showing them how to dress, telling them what to accept in a relationship and what to not accept, just everything. We teach them a lot of things, and we try to keep them close to us and offer them different opportunities as well. A lot of them don't have their mothers in their lives. A lot of them are in foster care or just have issues where they're dealing with some other person who's their guardian, and they don't have that connection. So we basically try to be the big sisters, or a lot of them call me mom, even though I'm not that old. That's kind of how we work. We're extended families to them, and we have a lot of females here. And I want to give a shout out to the Impact One ladies who are here today. Hi, Malik. But Nia does, she works really close with all the girls, and she always tries to get them involved in different activities. We always try to set up field trips and different things for them to experience. Every now and then we try to take them out of town and do something different with them. But she's always with them like their big sister. So,
yeah, just real quickly, Jeanette gave a shout out to Malik. She started in 08 with us in the summer jobs program. And most of these young people, they were written off. People didn't think they were going to do anything, and so forth and so on. And that's my girl there. She's been with it. She's close to graduation. She's close to taking care of business.
Next year, right?
Next year she graduates.
All right, graduating from North High School.
My name is Lavelle Wells. I just believe if we can establish some kind of program to help set up with these kids. And then because I'm like a first generation in Omaha, a guy Spanky, you know, the gangs flew here, we grew here. And with that being said, as Omaha, we was always humble. And if we can get together, like people my age, 40, and talk to like my nephew right here, I believe we can make a difference and help all the kids in the different hoods and to try to get along, you know. That's all I say.
We certainly don't have enough bodies. We can certainly use people that do it, even if you do it on your own. If you coordinate, what we try to do with the Empowerment Network and others is to coordinate services so that there's no overlap. I mean, somebody's not doing something that someone else is already doing. We approach it a little differently, and there are I can't tell you the number of ways we can approach this. But let's talk. because there's some ways that we can approach this. There's some other things that we can do that are currently not being done. There's a number of ways that you get at this. This is just Impact One's way. There are other ways to get at this.
All right, I won't be long this time. I just wanted to address her question. She asked about how do we help the young ladies, and how does Impact One help the young ladies? Well, all I can say is every organization has a role to play, and I believe Impact One is most effective with the young men, although they do help the young ladies. But I also want to speak about what we do at Girls Incorporated. All right, me personally, I believe that just my presence there, being a positive male role model who's been through some things, first and foremost, that helps the most. I also implemented a program, and it's broken down into sections. One of the sections is called A Woman's Worth. We'll have people come in from the outside. Of course, I can't teach it. We'll have people come in from the outside and talk to the girls. We have etiquette classes and stuff like that. But Girls Inc. as a whole, the motto is strong, smart, and bold. All right, you know about it. Yeah, and we have the girls that come out of Girls Incorporated, they're pretty successful. We have a whole host of alumni. We have girls that headed off to college because of some of the things that Girls Inc. implemented and installed in their minds, you know. Everything from STD testing to field trips and everything. So I'm just saying everybody has a role to play. And I know one thing. I deal with a lot of girls at Girls Incorporated who like to date the bad boy, the hardcore. All right. So just addressing that issue and, you know, chopping that down, then it stops a lot of the situations that go on with the guys, you know, because it's been that way forever. Probably when you were younger, too. The girls like the bad boys. But I'll cut it short, and I just wanted to address that question.
Again, I just let's please thank Rachel and Film Streams for allowing this to happen. And to learn more about some of the work that's going on at empoweromaha.com or Omaha 360, and then you can also go to Impact One or the Urban League as well. But one of the things that Chrome just mentioned and why the Empowerment Network exists is that there are a lot of great organizations out doing exceptional work. What we try to do is bring them together in a room and then identify who's doing what, where the gaps are. And that's why Impact One was launched. That's why the summer job program was launched, that those things were not available for the young men and women in our community. So we launched those programs and initiatives. But there are a lot of organizations, from Girls Inc. to Urban League, NCAP, on down the list, and many people in the room even, that are doing unbelievable work. I think sometimes in Omaha, we don't give ourselves enough credit. We have a long way to go. I'll be the first one to admit it. But there is so much work going on in this city that's never really truly recognized. How many people in the room knew anything about Impact One before you came in? Okay. Well, this is a pretty good group. I see about almost 40%. And also, I got to do this. I want to recognize the Director of Operations for the Empowerment Network, Vicki Quates Ferris, in the back in the yellow there. She helps manage and put together on a day-to-day basis to make sure that these things are coordinated. So I have to recognize her and our number one volunteer, her husband, Jason Ferris. Yep. And Miss Erica, where is she? She's volunteering with the mic. Thank you for everything. And while we're recognizing folks, we have some people that have been supportive of this from day one, even when everybody doubted and said, you can't use ex-offenders and you can't do this and you can't do the, and you don't do the pump. There are people in this room, a lot of them don't like to be recognized, so I won't do that. But they're the difference between us being out on the street and not having any support and actually being here, where over 700 young people in our community have had a job over the last 4 years. 700. And there's a lot more to do. We need a lot more support, but I want to, again, thank the folks that are here and Rachel and Film Streams for bringing a film like this so we can have these types of discussion. We look forward to doing it again. Thank you.
You've been listening to a special program on Noon Forum. We've heard a panel discussion which followed a screening of the 2011 documentary film The Interrupters, directed by Steve James. The event took place at Film Streams, Omaha's nonprofit cinema. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Wednesday evening, September 7th, 2011, for broadcast at this time. The members of the panel have included Jeanette Taylor, Executive Director of Impact One, Thomas Warren, former Omaha Chief of Police and currently President and Chief Executive Officer of the Urban League of Nebraska, and Ben Gray, Omaha District 2 City Councilman. The moderator of the discussion was Willie Barney, President and Facilitator of the Empowerment Network and Omaha 360. Special thanks to Rachel Jacobson, Casey Logan, and Jim Foyt of FilmStreams for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.